The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Well, as you've been hearing all weekend and indeed this morning, US and Israeli operations against Iran continue for a third day as Tehran has launched retaliatory strikes across the Gulf after the killing of the Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. For more on this, I'm joined firstly by Matt Fry, Channel 4 presenter. Matt is in Egypt this morning. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Claire.
So what's your assessment of what's been happening over the last couple of days?
Oh, my goodness. How much time do we have? I mean, I think there are a couple of key points here to make. One is, to what extent was this driven by the Israelis or by the Americans or by both? What is the end result going to be in Iran itself? I mean, I noticed that Donald Trump posted yesterday that unfortunately some of the people that he had sort of earmarked for possible leadership positions after the killing of the Supreme Leader had also been killed in the strike on his compound on Saturday morning, which seemed a rather silly thing to say. But, you know, is there a plan, as there was with Venezuela, where you had the figure of the vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, immediately slipping into the position vacated by the man that they'd kidnapped? I don't think that's the case. There are one or two characters that have emerged, like Ali Larijani, the veteran diplomat and now the chair of the kind of Supreme National Security Council, who may be in a position to form some kind of interim government, but whoever puts their head above the parapet as a potential successor to the Supreme Leader immediately, presumably, has a target on his head. Mm-hmm. And then the other key question, apart from how this all ends, is what about America's allies? What about the Gulf states who are so close to Donald Trump? They didn't want this war. The Saudis didn't want this war. The Qataris didn't want it. However much they dislike the Iranian regime, they didn't want this war because, as we're seeing now, it is very much upsetting their role in the world, which is to be a safe financial, you know, energy service industry haven in the middle of a very dangerous neighborhood. When you see five-star hotels getting hit either on purpose or inadvertently by Iranian drones and missiles, that freaks out the Gulf princes, and it totally destroys their business model. And finally, of course, the position of countries like France, Germany, and most importantly, Britain. Once again, Britain finds itself between a rock and a hard place, between Donald Trump, you know, and its own view that actually this military act against the Ayatollah and against Iran was illegal, but America is Britain's closest ally. And so America, once again, you know, to misquote George Bush from just before the Iraq war after 9/11, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. America, once again, is asking its closest allies to choose. And choosing in the time of Trump is that much more difficult, hard to believe, but it is, than choosing in the time of George W. Bush.
Just looking back at something from 2024, when it was believed that US intelligence had learned that the Iranian Supreme Leader had Donald Trump in his sights for an assassination. And Donald Trump made reference to this over the weekend when he said, "I got him before he got me." And there are those who speculate that, yes, you got the pressure from Israel bearing down on Donald Trump all of the time, but couple that with the personal grudge and it makes this much more a much more plausible action for him to take. Do you think that there's anything in that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if there was this plot against Donald Trump from Ali Khamenei, why haven't we heard about it before? Why didn't this come up in 2024? Why didn't it come up at the beginning of the year when Donald Trump seemed to be engaged in some kind of diplomatic process with the Iranians? Why didn't it come up last June during that short 12-day war between Israel and Iran, which the Americans briefly got involved in? So I don't buy this line from Donald Trump that he expounded in his address to the nation and to the world on Saturday morning in the early hours, that America was under imminent threat from Iran. I just don't see that. And none of the people I've spoken to who know more about this than I do see it either. I mean, America was not in danger from Iran. And if there was a plot to try and kill the American president, and I'm sure there are tons of plots on paper in some drawer somewhere in Tehran, doesn't mean that they're actionable, that they've been pursued, then again, why didn't he let us know earlier? I think this is, I mean, I can see where the Israeli interest in all this is. Prime Minister Netanyahu has made it an absolute article of faith from the very beginning of his term, his first term in office, you know, back in the late 1990s, that he wanted to take out the Ayatollah's regime, because they see this as a fundamental threat, and for good reason, because Iran talks about the Zionist entity, and President Ahmadinejad, the ex-president, who, by the way, was also killed in the airstrikes, apparently, had always said that Israel should be wiped off the map. But the extent to which they brought the Americans along to something that they feel deeply about may be a thing that will really haunt Donald Trump, both in domestic political terms, especially if the price of gas goes up, and that's always a bad thing for an American president in a driving nation like the US, but also if it ends up as a complete mess. And we know that America's wars of choice, and this is a war of choice, not a war of necessity, America's wars of choice from Vietnam to Iraq to this always end in disaster for many more people than you reckon at the beginning. And even if at the end of all this, the Iranian people manage to rise up against the Ayatollahs and against this horrible regime, for which there are really very, very few excuses, if they do that, which would be a wonderful outcome, the likelihood is that they won't, or that it'll be so messy, as it was after the removal of Colonel Gaddafi in Libya, that the result is a kind of civil war or civil strife or chaos, not in Libya this time, but in Iran, a nation of 90 million people at the heart of the Middle East, with an ancient civilization and a ton of oil.
And, you know, what constitutes success and what marks the end of this? These are always questions that are asked in these situations. And, of course, it's absolutely the question here, because we don't know what that looks like for Donald Trump.
Well, you know, success in a war of necessity, like the Second World War, let's say, as an obvious example, is we have managed to not get invaded by the Nazis. Right? That's success. We've survived, bruised and battered, and we've lost a lot of people, but we are not controlled by an evil dictator. That was never the danger for the United States in this, and probably not even for Israel, although there was the danger of, you know, if they ever did develop a nuclear weapon, of obliteration by the Iranians. But so success is a much more difficult thing to define. Is it nation building, as it was supposed to be in Afghanistan and Iraq? Well, that failed, and I don't think there's any hint of anyone trying to do any nation building in Iran, because they're leaving that to the Iranian people themselves. Is it, is it oil, protecting the oil sources? Well, at the moment, it looks as if the Straits of Hormuz, to which one quarter of the world's oil passes, are virtually closed, and that's bad news for oil. Is it the wider security of the Middle East? Well, I don't think anyone's got a plan for how that would look. You know, is this a region of democracies interacting with each other? Well, that's not likely. Most of them aren't democracies. Is it about, you know, keeping America safe? Well, America was already safe before this. So these are some really fuzzy war aims, if they exist at all. And I think they will come to haunt Trump in the coming weeks and months as he tries to justify a war that, by the way, is a lot less popular in America, and especially amongst his base, his MAGA base, than even the Iraq war was.
Matt, we'll leave it there for now, but so good to talk to you, and we will likely want to keep in touch with you over the coming days. Matt Fry there, Channel 4 presenter and Europe editor. Let's go to Adam Parsons now, who's the Sky News Middle East correspondent. Adam, thank you for being with us this morning, and I know it's an extremely busy time for you. I've been watching you all weekend. Maybe the best place to start is just for you to bring us up to date with what you've been seeing and hearing there.
Well, Jerusalem at the moment is a pretty quiet city. Blue skies, barely a cloud in the sky. If it was any other time, you'd say, what a very enjoyable morning ahead. But of course, actually, the morning started with air raid sirens, with the interception of missiles ahead of above our heads. When I went to bed last night, there was a really cacophonous series of interceptions, lots of missiles, lots of explosions in the air. There were big waves of attacks going in the other direction from Israeli and American forces going to Tehran. But I think that the big change that happened overnight wasn't here. It was up in the north of Israel and the south of Lebanon, where in the early hours, Hezbollah launched rockets into northern Israel, and Israel responded with a series of clearly pre-prepared attacks on Lebanese targets, on the capital, Beirut, and issued evacuation orders to no fewer than 53 villages, telling people to leave in advance of future attacks. So Lebanon has now been pulled into this. Israel military sources clearly saying that those attacks will continue and putting the blame fully on Hezbollah. Saying you're doing this because you're a proxy of Iran, you're doing the bidding of Iran, and you're dragging Lebanese people into a war that they don't want to be involved in.
And those people in those 53 villages who've been told to leave, where do they go?
Well, that's a very good question. And I'm afraid that times like this, things happen fast. And those attacks at those villages haven't all been attacked yet. They may not be attacked. But Israel is saying, as I think it is, and following your very interesting conversation with Matt Friday, that the kind of, what are these war ends? Well, I think from an Israeli perspective, a lot of this is the destruction of groups like Hezbollah, like Hamas, like the Houthis, who've been funded by Iran. Israel thinks that Hezbollah over the past year has probably received something like $1 billion worth of support from Iran. They think this is an opportunity to not just stymie these groups, but effectively to destroy them. And from their perspective, also to try and stimulate regime change in Iran. So where those people go is, I think, bluntly a question that Israel is probably not troubling itself with too much. They're saying, get away from those places because they face the chance of being attacked because those are villages where Hezbollah has got infrastructure or has got leadership. And those are places that we reserve the right to attack. And again, you can't help the conclusion that Israel built up a big military presence on these borders. It clearly had plans. It didn't just invent 53 villages in the space of an hour after Hezbollah's attack this morning. It was waiting for that and it's responding.
And what are people saying about the Iranian response to this? I'm reading some commentary that calls it chaotic. However, if we look at it in the round, we see that Kuwait has been dragged in, the wider Gulf. We'll be hearing more about that in a minute. We have the British now under pressure at their military base in Cyprus, because as soon as they said they were making their bases available, we had that strike on the runway there. So what is your assessment of how Iran have reacted to all of this?
Iran is trying to embroil this whole regime, this whole region, I should say, into a conflict. I think that's clear. So even though the attacks are coming from America and Israel, it is responding by attacking Gulf states, by launching these drones towards, and by also clearly encouraging Hezbollah to attack Israel. It wants this to spread wide. It wants it to be difficult and grim and complicated and intractable, rather than simply an exchange of missiles with Israel. And according to the Israeli military, believe, this is their belief, their intelligence, that Iran is targeting centers of population rather than military or political centers, that they are deliberately targeting population centers. We saw one of that yesterday about Shemesh, where what were clearly civilians have been killed, nine, when a missile hit a bunker. And also destroyed a school and a synagogue. Now, that's Israeli military intelligence, and there will be many who say, well, Israel's track record of not killing civilians over the past couple of years has been pretty awful in Gaza. But if that is right, and Iran is deliberately targeting population centers, and as you've mentioned, targeting Gulf states, blowing up hotels, hitting ports, trying to make the Strait of Hormuz inaccessible to shipping, then this certainly has the potential to be a regional problem, potentially a regional conflict, and to drag on and be very complex. The flip side of that, I have to tell you, is that there are those who think that Iran in the coming days will call for a diplomatic solution, which could be code for a ceasefire, and that could take the air out of it. And that will raise a question again is, what does America want? Mm-hmm. What does Israel want? What does victory look like in this war? Is it regime change? Or do we get to a point where everyone thinks it has been degraded enough and it's time to stop?
And does Iran have the military capability to keep this going?
I mean, nobody does, insofar as they are using missiles at a huge pace. They have very strong missile reserves. They have the capacity to keep making them. They are, as we know, they make Shahid drones, which are extremely effective. But they are pitched against the Americans and the Israelis. The Israelis they know about, but when the Americans have two carrier groups, and if they maintain a fortitude to keep this war going, that is an enemy that I don't know if anybody could match.
Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. Adam Parsons there, who's Sky News Middle East correspondent in Jerusalem. Well, as we've been hearing over the weekend, this is affecting Irish people right throughout the Gulf region. And we can join Roseanne Kenny Scully now, who's in Dubai. Roseanne, you moved there, your husband, the dog, the baby, about a month ago, and now you're in the middle of this very odd, I would assume, frightening situation. Tell us about where you are and what's been happening.
Hi, Claire. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, basically, we relocated here about a month ago to expand our IT business, you know, whole family in tow. We're in the Business Bay area. And basically on Saturday, it was the first kind of we really heard about the unrest and looking at the news and socials and stuff like that. We were a little bit on edge, but we decided, look, you know, we should be safe enough maybe to go out for dinner somewhere local. So we went down to City Walk. It's like an open air mall. And about 6:30 p.m., we were just sitting down to dinner outside. And about 200 metres away, a building was hit. We literally just grabbed the baby and ran as, you know, as quick as we could, jumped in a taxi to get home and to safety as quick as we could. So we found out later that was like shrapnel hitting the building. The missile had been intercepted. When we got back to the building, like, there's about 2,000 people kind of living in this community, and everybody was sharing information of, you know, what they thought was going on or what was going to happen. And basically family at home were connecting and just like they're extremely worried about us, especially like, with the baby and stuff like that. Family are just really worried. They're seeing things online. They're seeing things on social, and there's like AI stuff and stuff that might be not correct online. So it just really, really worried my family. And then Saturday night, things got a bit worse. So we had an alert to everybody's phone about 12 p.m. Everybody to get to shelter and situ in place. So we were in the basement of the building. Everybody decided that was the safest place to be, down beside the car parks. So we brought blankets and pillows and stuff, and obviously had the baby and dog, and everybody was down there with their families, just not knowing really what was going on or what the alert was about. So yeah, there's great community, and the people are absolutely so kind, and everybody is so helpful, and they're all helping each other, and everybody's in the same situation. Mm-hmm. We're all expats here, and yeah, it's just been a really excellent response.
So despite all of that happening over the weekend, has life been carrying on pretty much as normal around all of this?
It's absolutely surreal. Like on Sunday, everybody kind of ventured out. We eventually, about 2:30 in the morning, everybody got up to bed. And on Sunday, then everybody was out in the common areas around the pools and coffee shop, just talking about what was happened. And, you know, everybody's kind of keeping the children calm and then playing together while missiles are going overhead and being intercepted. And you're hearing the loud kind of boom noises, which I believe is the interceptions. So it's really surreal that as we're all there, you know, sitting, having coffee and at the pool and everything, that missiles are just flying over our heads. So it's a very strange kind of situation to be in. The supermarkets are full. We have like the metros running on time, construction, the malls are open, not really any panic, just an undertone of a little bit eeriness and people kind of worried about what's to come.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, the Department of Foreign Affairs is saying this morning, the minister is saying that there will be a limited number of commercial flights leaving Abu Dhabi this afternoon. Is that something that you would think about at this stage, Roseanne, or are you happy enough to stay?
I think for the moment I'm happy enough to stay in situ. We have our dog with us, so I don't know what the situation is, you know, with our dog traveling, and that's part of the family, and we won't be going anywhere without her. So I think there is certain steps we'd have to take and kind of look into that a lot further. So I also might be a little bit afraid to fly right now, given the not knowing everything about the situation. So I think I'd prefer to just stay here where it's feeling relatively calm. I feel we're being very well looked after. I know like they have an excellent defense system here. Really, I suppose over like 500 missiles and drones have been aimed toward us, and they've almost intercepted every single one of them. So they have some amazing technology here. So I do feel safe to kind of stay here rather than maybe trying to fly home, especially with the dog.
Yeah, but when you moved there, you know, so recently, you would never have imagined that at midnight on a Saturday, you'd be heading down with the baby to a basement, you know, for shelter.
I never thought this would happen. Absolutely. It was a bit shocking at the time. Everybody's reacting differently. Like, I know my neighbour, who's American here, she's alone and she's absolutely terrified. We kind of had been through some similar type situations. So we're seeing things through a slightly different lens, and we see how organised it is here and how well they're, you know, keeping everything running and they're letting people know what's going on. So we were kind of seeing it through a bit of a different lens, that we do feel kind of well looked after and hopefully safe.
Well, listen, it's good to talk to you, and mind yourself, Roseanne, Kenny, Scully and family in Dubai. And we'll be keeping you up to date right across the morning with the very latest developments in the Middle East.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.